Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. What's up?
Well, I'm going to have to put in some earplugs or eye shades or something for this episode because I don't want to be... I think I'm very susceptible to suggestions, and your guest here is the king at making suggestions.
Yeah. Don't give away my guest yet.
Let's just
hold on.
Warning for those of you that are easily swayed. You may want to, you know...
Yeah, today is going to be a fascinating interview. Our guest is Jonathan Fisher, a certified certified hypo. Yeah, there we go. He's a certified hypnotherapist, NLP trainer, and master facilitator, having worked these fields for more than 15 years now. He is a primary content creator for MindFi hypnosis apps with millions of downloads worldwide, which I am jealous of. Jonathan likes to say...
He just hypnotizes everybody into it, that's all.
Jonathan likes to say that he has his doctorate in being doctored and often refers to what he calls his list. This list is his personal health history. It's also his why about life. Check this out. Jonathan had heart surgery at 16 months. Then he's had endocarditis, a stroke, open brain surgery, atrial fibrillation, and in 2016, he experienced the most extensive open heart surgery ever performed at Kaiser's Main Hospital in Los Angeles, California. So his coaching and speaking company is called Mystic Heart Inc., and it's a reference to his own heart history and the passion for ideas of Joseph Campbell, the world-renowned expert on comparative mythologies. Through his hypno-coaching and speaking, Jonathan draws upon training and his life experience to help people. As Campbell might put it, live their bliss and make their life a truly heroic hero's life, because Campbell was into the hero's journey as he was into many mythologies. Jonathan, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. We've had a couple of pre-conversations I often say, I don't know why I don't do this. I should tape my pre-conversations because sometimes they're better than my podcast.
Well, I think the hypnosis may have started already because I'm going to make a couple of corrections on the text. One is MindFi is the name of the company.
MindFi.
MindFi, like MindFi, borrow your pencil. And then it's Mythic Heart instead of Mystic Heart.
So boy, I really did a hell of a job here, well, didn't I?
People, they're searching and searching for me, but can't find me. So Mythic Heart, like mythology, like Joseph Campbell, which is, I was reading one of his books when I had to think of a title for my company, and I thought, Mythic Heart, I'll combine both of those things. So
yeah, that's great. I love that. I like it better than Mystic Heart because that's a pretty common. Mythic Heart is there's a bit of something intriguing about that. What does that mean? What is Mythic Heart? We'll talk more about that. You know how I'd like to begin the podcast is to get right into it. I'm not a slow starter. I'm gonna get into the let's get right into it. And you call yourself a hypno coach, not a hypnotherapist.
Right.
Why is that? What does that mean?
Well, technically, I am a certified hypnotherapist. So, like the AHA, the American Hypnosis Association, recognizes me as that. But I'm thinking, well, what am I really doing? Is it therapy? Sort of. In that, there's art therapists or whatever. But to me, it's really like I'm doing coaching with my clients. So I'm coaching them through, whatever. It could be a health issue, could be confidence in speaking or whatever that I'm helping them with. And then I'm backing that up at an unconscious level with the hypnosis. So that's why I say hypno-coaching, to kind of get away from the label of doing, quote, therapy on somebody. It's coaching them through life. It's giving them tips and bringing out the best in them.
How does hypnosis help?
How does hypnosis help? Wow. Okay, well, first of all, what is hypnosis? Maybe...
That's a good question.
Because, like, well, what is it even? Because it can help in a lot of different ways. But a lot of times people have these fears and misconceptions, and we talked a little bit about that. But it's something I talk about with every client in the first session is, you know, what are the fears and misconceptions?
And we're going to talk about that next.
Yeah.
But I want to know more about hypnosis itself.
Yeah, well, we tend to say it's a focused concentration, often paired with deep relaxation. Truth be told is, we don't really know. It can be measured as far as, there was a study at Stanford where they did MRIs, and they said there's actual measurable brain functions when people are hypnotized. And yet we don't really know what it is. It's something different than the placebo response, even though that is a real effect. It's its own thing, and we don't really know. So if someone says, it's this, we don't know what it is. It can have an effect, and yet we're not sure exactly how to label it. Is it an altered state? Is it something else? We don't really know. But it is something that everyone can experience. We all do experience it once in a while. And it's a way to talk to, get access to the unconscious mind is how I would describe it.
That's what I was just going to ask. Yep. Is it sort of a route to the unconscious?
It really is. I mean, Jung said that the dreams were the royal road to the unconscious, or maybe that was Freud, but I think it was Jung.
Yeah.
And I would say that hypnosis is the royal road to doing something about the unconscious, because I was taught, or we were taught years ago, this is like 15 years ago, as it was mentioned, that the conscious mind is 12% and the unconscious mind is 88%, which is a little bit like an iceberg if you think of that. Now, at the time when I learned that, I talked to a researcher who was doing cutting-edge brain research that I happen to know. She was in academia, and they were doing MRI, functional MRI studies. I said, well, we're learning that it's 12% and 88%. She said, well, actually, we would say more that's like 10 and 90. And now, lately, I'm hearing it's more like 5% and maybe 95%. So think about that. When you're doing anything at a conscious level, which could also be called willpower, whatever you're trying to change, you have at best maybe 10% of your mind working for you, maybe as little as 5%. But really, we're being driven by that 90 or 95% that is our unconscious mind. And that's where our behaviors are, that's where our values are, that's where our belief systems are, which drives our behaviors. If you want to change it, you have to change it at that unconscious level, and that's what hypnosis does, is it bypasses the critical mind, the logical mind, and makes these changes that you logically, your rational conscious mind says you want to make.
But you're not aware of.
Meaning what?
Consciously aware of.
You might be. It's weird because when we say, some people will say subconscious. In fact, I learned originally that, you know, it's this subconscious mind. But there could be subconscious, preconscious, unconscious. I tend to group it to either conscious, which is what we're aware of, which is the conversation we're having now, pretty much. And then I say unconscious, and that can include things that are pre-conscious, or it can include things that are readily accessible to your conscious mind. Like if I said, you know, what color is your couch? That a second ago, that was in your unconscious mind, but you're probably consciously thinking about it now. So we can access a lot of things in our unconscious mind, but some things are a little deeper. Some behaviors, some belief systems that are at a deeper level and are more difficult to change. So in hypnosis, we take the goals that a person consciously wants, and we work on those goals at the unconscious level so that once they're in the unconscious, you do them. You're wired for it.
Okay, tell me the difference between a very focused and I hate even using the word successful, but let's just go ahead and use that word.
Yeah.
Meditative routine where you're in meditation and you truly have been able to dismiss the majority of noise that is around you,
yeah.
And you are really focusing almost on nothing, trying on nothing. Is that similar to hypnosis?
It could be a little bit similar. We would say that, you know, everybody experiences hypnosis differently. First of all, everybody can be hypnotized because it is a natural state that's happening all the time. And everyone experiences it, yeah, a little bit differently. So I would say, you know, what's the difference between meditation and hypnosis? Hypnosis, in meditation, yes, I also believe that the goal of meditation is to clear one's mind. Sometimes we start by focusing on one thing, maybe breathing or or a candle or whatever.
Yes.
And then the idea, from what I understand, is then to clear your mind of all thought. Now, with hypnosis, it's a little bit different in that it's still an internal experience. So you're still going from the outside world as being the predominant reality to going more internal, and it would involve the natural slowing of brain frequencies. The difference, though, in hypnosis is you may still be thinking of things. In fact, to even do hypnosis, you are thinking of things, in that it's kind of a guided change thing. So I may be talking to somebody, giving them suggestions, and their conscious mind might be thinking of things like, I wonder if this is hypnosis. I wonder if this is going correctly. Did I bring my shopping list with me? Because later I have to. They have these little monkey mind in the background.
Of course,
their conscious mind is asking all these questions. Or, I wonder if it's going well. Is this how it's supposed to go well? I sort of felt relaxed, but I don't know. That's fine. I'm not talking
to
that 10%.
So there's still a conscious aspect going on at the time.
Absolutely.
You're hypnotized.
Yeah. There's certainly, everyone's different, but a lot of people will have that little chatter, and that's fine because I'm not talking to that part of their mind. I'm talking to the 90% that's picking up everything, that's absorbing everything that I'm saying. In fact, sometimes I'll either let that little chattering conscious mind think of things and do whatever, or I'll give it a task, like have it count back from 100. So it's counting back from 100, and I'm talking to the unconscious mind and giving it suggestions. And that's really the trick of what we're doing, is what's the best way for this person to accept hypnotic suggestions? And that depends on their suggestibility, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yeah, we will. I tried with a friend, and it was not, and it was more just like an experiment. Let's see what this is like.
Yep.
I tried hypnotherapy, and I'm one of those people that is difficult to hypnotize. I can be hypnotized, but for some reason,
okay,
you know, I don't fall under really quickly.
Yep.
But it took me to a very special place. He had me, so there was a consciousness to it, but an unconsciousness at the same time. He took me to a place on an ocean with a rock and all that, where I could settle, and it was like meditation, and that getting everything out of my mind, except I had this place in mind, and there was nothing else going on other than that, but the place was helpful. There was something about this spot that was comfortable for me and easy for me to express myself from it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. We would just call that possibly your personal place, if for lack of, you know, just sort of a general term for it. Well, maybe let's talk about the fears and misconceptions, because this is sort of a...
I got one question
before. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I really do have one question.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And it's all about hypnosis, and it's, again, I'm taking this very personally, and so I'm thinking of my personal experiences, and I can get hyper-focused. I mean, hyper-focused, mm-hmm. where... I remember when I used to work a real job and I'd work at a place, I would walk into file cabinets.
Mm.
I was so focused on what I was thinking about or what I had to do that I wouldn't see things or people in front of me. Is that similar to hypnosis, or is that a...
Yes, absolutely it is. Hypnosis is generally not what people think it is. In some ways, it's what they think, and it's also not what they think, because of stage hypnosis shows they've seen in media, movies, television. Hypnosis is a couple of different things. First of all, it's different for everybody. It's a natural state that happens all the time. So a couple of examples that I'll use when I'm talking to somebody is, have you ever been in your car driving on the freeway, and your mind was thinking of something, and you missed your exit? Or, yeah, clearly we've all had that. Or have you ever driven to some place you drive to all the time, and you arrive and you go, I don't remember driving.
A thing. Yes.
Yeah, it's like your unconscious mind was driving you there, but your mind was thinking about other stuff. Your unconscious mind, clearly, if we've been driving for years, knows how to drive a car. Or if you get really absorbed in a movie and maybe you're at a theater and you're surrounded by people and you kind of forget, once you're absorbed in the movie, that there are all these people around. Or you get absorbed in a book. So absorption in something can be hypnosis. It's the feeling we have right before falling asleep. In hypnosis, people can't be made to do something that they don't want to do. That's against their morals, their personality, their ethics. They can't be made to have beliefs that are against their morals, their personality, their ethics. It's just not possible. You don't accept those suggestions. Everybody experiences hypnosis differently. So some people, they feel that their body is very light and floaty. Some people feel that their body is very heavy and they're sinking into the chair. And some people, they feel like they're kind of relaxed and their eyes are closed. And that's fine. Some people, if I say, oh, you're going through this dark forest, or I don't know if I'd say dark forest, this wonderful forest, you're going through this forest, and I describe it and the crunch of the leaves and whatever, and they feel like they are there, for some people. And some people, if I describe the exact same scene the exact same way, will be like, yeah, I sort of had a sense for it. That's how they experience hypnosis. Now, as far as which of the two would have a more profound experience therapeutically, both can. It doesn't really matter. One might be a more fun and it's sort of a richer experience, but each person experiences it in a different way. When I might say something like sleep or deep sleep, but it's not sleep. People are completely aware. So if somebody thinks that they're going to go somewhere else, and then they're going to be awakened, and then where did I go? And what was like? It's not generally like that. It might be like that for people who we would call somnambulists, who would come on stage and do a stage show, and we find those people in the audience. But most people don't experience that. Most people, when they're hypnotized, hear everything that I would be saying, or somebody, the hypnotist, would be saying. They may have natural forgetting, like we naturally forget any conversation, but they hear everything, they're aware of everything. In fact, with their eyes closed, they might be more aware of what's happening around them. They not only don't lose control, they actually gain control over their unconscious mind. So it's this, as we would call it, a do with, not a do to thing, meaning because all hypnosis is self-hypnosis, if you don't want to be hypnotized, generally, I can't hypnotize you, but if you go along with what I'm saying and you follow along and you do the things, that will get you there. We'll get you to the experience for you as far as hypnosis. And I think that's the problem that a lot of hypnotists have, in that they don't fully explain what it may or may not be like for the client.
Right.
They think it's going to be this, and if it wasn't that, it's like, oh, I wasn't hypnotized. Or some people think of it as this sort of badge of honor. I've found where you didn't think that, you don't think that, but some people like, I can't be hypnotized. It's impossible because they're whatever. They think they're too smart or they're too rational or too whatever. And I've found that sort of it seems like people who are more suggestible tend to be more intelligent, tend to have a greater imagination and a greater ability to focus. Not that other people don't have that, but there tends to be that trait.
So they're easier to hypnotize.
They're more suggestible, and I view sort of the opposite of popular opinion. I view hypnotic suggestibility, as kind of like a superpower. Some people would say, oh, you're gullible, or they're weak-minded. I view these as the exact opposite. Because if 90% of our minds are unconscious, if you want to make any permanent change, any true change to who you are, you must do it unconsciously. And if someone doesn't have the ability to set aside what we would call the critical mind, which is the logical, rational part of their mind, they can't make certain changes at that fundamental unconscious level. So they're blocking themselves to true positive change.
So tell me if I, from our conversation thus far,
yep.
if I were asked to define hypnosis and hypno-coaching or hypnotherapy, I would say it is a process by which you dismiss or get rid of the chatter of the monkey mind. And you can focus on the unconscious, on the deepest part of your soul, the deepest part of your mind, and you can learn from that. You can learn the true self, the true aspects of yourself without all of this interfering noise. Am I close to defining hypnosis?
Yeah, that's pretty close. I tend to think of it as a way to bypass that critical area. And then the critical area, if we think of it, it is like a filter between the conscious and unconscious mind. And the critical area is that rational, logical, reasoning part of the mind. Now, it's only rational and logical according to you or according to me. It's our version of rationality and our version of logic. And if we can set that aside, or if I'm able to, or when I'm able to figure out what a person's suggestibility is and work around that, think of suggestibility as how we learn things. To me, it's all about suggestibility. And I'll give keynote talks on hypnotic suggestibility.
Yeah, that's in my notes to talk about.
Yeah. And maybe that would be, it'd be great to just talk about that right now. But that's the key to everything. And that suggestibility is this, in a general way, suggestibility is how we learn. And also generally, you could think of it as a continuum where some people learn directly and some people learn more inferentially. So that let's say if I were to say to somebody, it's really cold with the door open. If they learned more directly, they might think, he thinks it's really cold with the door open. If they learn more inferentially, they might think, maybe he wants me to close the door because he's cold, right? They're reading into it.
Yes.
Now, we all do both of those, but some people tend to be on one side or the other. Now, that's generally, but if
and
we
that's
think
of, suggestibility.
That's suggestibility. Now, if we think of more specifically or other ways to think of suggestibility is, I'm suggestible to the English language. I'm not suggestible to Swahili. If someone speaks Swahili to me, I'm not going to know what they're saying. If they speak English, they can bypass a part of my mind. They can get information in. I may not accept all of it, but I'm a lot more likely to accept it than if it's in Swahili or a language I don't understand. That's the same thing for everything. If I'm if I'm Republican and I'm talking to another Republican, I'm more suggestible to him or her. If I'm Republican and talking to a Democrat, maybe I'm less suggestible to that person with respect to politics. So it's, what are you suggestible to? That applies to every single area of life. If you're pro-education, then you might be swayed or more suggestible to a college professor. If you're anti-education or whatever, you may be less, or you may be more skeptical and put up your barriers. Your critical area might expand. You become less suggestible, less able to be open to what they have to say.
That seems to me that your clients must have a tremendous amount of trust in you in order to accept the suggestibility, the ideas that you're giving them. Because if they don't trust, they're going to blow it off. But if they trust, then they may be able to use some of the suggestions and ideas that you have to improve their life.
That is exactly it. That's why in the first session I talk about what hypnosis is, what it isn't. And a lot of what hypnotherapy is, do you jive with the person that you're working with? Because, you know, yes, I could give them suggestions but that they don't accept, but I'm only giving them suggestions for issues, if they're issues, that they want help with. So I'm generally never giving them suggestions they don't want. I just have to learn what's the best way to give the suggestions to them that they do want. Because if I'm giving them a suggestion that they reject, they just don't accept it. You know, I truly am the do no harm modality in that. You either accept the positive suggestion or you don't. And we have to figure out, well, what is the reason why this person didn't? And that can be very powerful and very telling about their suggestibility.
And that would have a lot to do with fears and misconceptions, would it not?
I would agree. I would say so. I'd say a lot of it has to do with that.
Well, why don't we talk about that after a break? We'll take a quick break, and we will come back, and we will go right into fears and fears and misconceptions.
Okay.
Okay. y'all. It's Charlie Hedges. This is The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I am here with an extra special guest, Jonathan Fisher, who is a hypno coach, which is similar to a hypnotherapist, but he likes to view his job as coaching more than therapy, and he is also founder. Are you founder of Mythic Heart?
I am, yes.
He's founder of Mythic Heart. He also has an app, which I mispronounced, and he rightly corrected me. It's Mindify Hypnosis Apps and has millions of downloads. And we have covered... What is the concept of hypnosis? And, you know, most of us are familiar with hypnosis as a routine at an entertainment event or something that we might go to the Magic Castle in L.A., which right. Everybody in L.A. knows a Magic Castle, and there's going to be all these little tricks that are done by the hypnotist. We find it quite fun. But actually, we're rather skeptical about it being a legitimate discipline in the field of psychoanalytics and thinking that there's some hooey involved in that. And so there are several fears and misconceptions about hypnosis. And I know you've encountered in speaking to them. Can you you want to... Tell me about the fears and misconceptions of hypnosis.
Sure, and I mentioned a bunch of them already, but really it's dealing with that same aspect. You mentioned the Magic Castle, but it's that stage hypnotist factor of people either believe that it's nonsense, that it doesn't exist, which it is a real measurable thing. There are dozens of studies over decades, saying that hypnosis is a real thing. It really does exist. In fact, in 1953, the AMA said hypnosis is a legitimate practice for many medical issues. In 1953. And hypnosis, in some form or another, has been going on for thousands of years. The idea of suggesting things to people. There is this ability that we've had. So the stage hypnotism thing really is an issue. It's imagine if instead of a hypnotist, you had a dentist doing a show. Same thing, but a dentist is on stage and gets a bunch of chairs up there, and the dentist brings people on stage, and they're here's we're going to give them the Novocaine, we're going to have you drink water, and it's going to spill all over you because you can't control your mouth, and we're going to laugh at you, and then we're going to put you on gas, and then we're going to have the drill or whatever, and we're going to terrify you. People would view dentists a lot differently. In fact, even more people might be afraid to go because they view dentists as this, like, they're going to make fun of me. They're going to control me. What are they going to do? But that's what hypnotism and hypnotists have had over the years, where it's viewed as this unusual thing that either oddly doesn't exist or doesn't work, or is so powerful that it makes people do things that they don't want to do.
That's the big fear.
Right. Then, you know, pretty much every single time I tell someone I'm a hypnotherapist or hypno coach or I'm a hypnotist, they'll say, what? Are you going to make me do what? Bark like a dog or quack like a duck or something. And that's because of movies of stage hypnotism, and it just doesn't work like that. Now, stage hypnotists are using hypnosis. They're finding the most, as we had talked about, the most suggestible people, the people that respond to things inferentially, the people that respond to things directly.
How can they tell?
Okay, so if you've ever been to a have you been to a hypnosis show?
I've only seen it on television.
Okay, but we've maybe seen people, you'll get the crowd, like I did one show, and I'll never do it again because I hated when they laughed at, and that's the whole point, when they laughed at the, quote, subjects, I would call them clients, on stage. Because it's the exact opposite of what I would normally do in
right,
coaching people.
Right.
But what I did is, and this is a very common thing, I would have everybody in the audience, and the bigger the audience, the better, so we can find those highly suggestible people. We would call them somnambulists. We'd say, okay, everybody put your arms out in front of you, and then clap your hands together, and then intertwine your fingers. And I'm going to count down from 10 down to 0. And with each count, your grip is going to get tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter, so that when I get to 0, it'll be so tight that you cannot release your grip. And so I count down and I give some suggestions and I'll say, zero, it's so tight that you cannot release your hands. You may try and you'll find that you cannot. Well, what happens is most people release their hands and they're like, I can. But some people won't. In fact, they'll probably laugh, look to the people they're with like, I can't, he's right. I'll see those people and I'll go, you know, raise your
suggestibility.
Yeah, I'll say raise your, you know, your hands, your arms that are connected in the air and come up and I'll release them for you and then have a seat. Because these are the most suggestible. Again, not the weak-minded. I would say more powerfully minded and that they're more suggestible. They're more readily able than the rest of us to change things at an unconscious level. Now, there is a little bit of a side note to that in that sometimes I'll have clients come in and they might be hyper-suggestible, they might be somnambulists, and they're already in a hypnotic state. So they're walking around out there taking in everything. So if someone says, you look great today, they feel fantastic. And if a stranger says anything negative, they take it personally and they feel horrible. So they have these highs and lows. When they come in as a client, I de-hypnotize them. So essentially, they're already kind of hypnotized. I take them, we would say, deeper, more suggestible, more hypnotized, more relaxed, in my case, in how I'm doing it, and then take them out of it so they're less suggestible walking around out in reality, because the critical mind serves a purpose. You want to have logic and rational, the logical and rational mind to protect ourselves from the negative suggestions out there. But the fact that they can put that aside and access their unconscious so readily, superpower. They can change so many things in their life through hypnosis. It's truly remarkable.
And it seems that habits are changed through hypnosis, and habits are, you know, right, almost impossible to change, and yet habits are impacted by hypnosis, are they not?
Absolutely. In fact, because it's the 90%, it's all habit. It's all what we will call the 90% we call our knowns. It's the world that you're familiar with. So, it's going to keep you there. There's a whole other discussion we can have on that, but it's your habits for everything, for what you tell yourself all day long. We have, like, I think it's like 90,000 thoughts a day, and like 96% of them are the exact same as yesterday. So those are your habits, including your self-talk, including your thinking that keeps you, me, where we are. So that's what we do in hypnosis is, well, where would you like to be? Because your conscious mind can think ahead and go, I would love to be a billionaire. But your unconscious mind will go, yeah, well, that's not what's programmed. What's programmed is you barely scrape by. So what we do is, like, a conscious mind wants billionaire. We have to give it suggestions and give it a reality so that it becomes a new known. We've heard of people who win the lottery and then lose it all, right? Sometimes they lose even more than they had to begin with because they weren't conditioned to accept wealth. They didn't go through the process of usually gradually accepting it. Sometimes sports players go through this, where if they don't have a background to handle the new wealth that's thrust upon them, they retire from sports and the millions that they have are gone because they didn't condition themselves to see themselves as a certain type of person who is wealthy, handles wealth, continues to grow their wealth and expand their wealth. It's all at that unconscious habit level.
Does hypnotism increase one's confidence?
It's a major part of it, yes. It's maybe every single thing that I do with somebody, anything that I work on, it is increasing confidence. So, like, let's say, you know, one thing I love helping people with is public speaking. So it's helping them with the confidence to do that, and then helping them design their speeches and whatever as well. So we give them suggestions to have that confidence when they're speaking in front of people, and then they go speak. So then now they have that unconscious belief, and then they have the real experience of speaking confidently. And then they speak a little bit more, and they get more confidence, and they speak in reality, they get more confidence. So there's this interplay of this inner unconscious belief and the actual realization in life, the verification of, I'm actually a good speaker.
So you are instructing and destructing at the same time. You're destructing or removing that fear of public speaking while instructing them in the positive aspects that they can actually perform this task.
Exactly. And that applies to a lot of things. So yes, for like public speaking, it would be working on the fear, the phobia of the speaking. And then by doing that, then we insert a great quote memories or experiences of them on stage speaking, so that when they actually go in front of people, that it feels like they've done this before. And that happens to not everything we do. Sometimes we don't necessarily work on the belief itself. We don't necessarily work on, this will get to something that we wanted to talk about. We don't work on the fear necessarily. We just work on where they want to be. We work on the goal. And the stronger of two things, the stronger will prevail. And the other thing, the old belief, will tend to die away anyway. You don't even have to acknowledge it. Go forward, not backward, is what I would say. What do you want? And let's go, let's head toward what you want and kind of ignore the pain of what you're running away from, because that'll dissolve on its own.
That's, you know, Jonathan, that is really fascinating. That's a very, very different approach, because we focus on getting rid of the negative, and
yep.
The reality is we're putting so much focus on that we're reinforcing the negative.
Right.
We are not.
Yep.
And you're saying exactly the opposite. Let's reinforce the positive and let the negative go away, because the positive is now become stronger than the negative. Is that correct?
It is, and it's more fun, it's more compelling. It's far more compelling to go towards something that you want than to run away from something you fear. So you take something like weight loss, weight management. Obviously, I do a lot with that, and there are a lot of things that go into weight management. And I'm never going to have them focus on the negatives of whatever they think that might be about being overweight. We focus on, where do you want to go? But I also focus on all the other areas of life. So let's say the person wants to lose, you know, go down 50 pounds. Well, that might take a while. But in the meantime, we can work on all these other areas. Because if I told somebody, okay, let's say you're overweight, but what if you had the best job you can imagine? You had as much money as you ever wanted. You had the best relationship. That your partner found you endlessly sexy and wanted to be with you all the time. That your kids were great. That everything about your life was wonderful. You enjoyed every aspect of your life. And you're the same weight that you are. How big of a deal is it for you? We focus on where you want to go. And so as they're maybe reducing these 50 pounds, we work on these other areas that maybe can be accomplished sooner, so that they get this forward momentum in life. And things just tend to happen when that happens.
Yeah, and the odd thing is that the person you just described, a great percentage of them are going through depression right now.
Right.
You know, they have everything in the world, and yet there's a hole. And
yep.
And through your suggestibility and through, I imagine you're discovering a lot of things from the unconscious that gives you clues into what kind of suggestions you want to give them.
Absolutely. In fact, on one of the apps that we did years ago, I created this content for Mindify, and they said, hey, can we do an app on depression? Because clearly that's a big area. And I said, well, one, no, because it's a DSM. It's in the DSM. It's actually a mental health issue. And again, I'm not a therapist, and we're not diagnosing people. We're not treating diagnosable mental health issues. But we can do a track on happiness.
Oh,
we can do that.
Yeah.
We can get people where we all want to be. Now, if somebody who is depressed listens to it, again, it's do no harm. They're not going to get worse. And maybe if they have an actual diagnosable depression, maybe it's a clinical depression, maybe it's severe depression, whatever we want to label it, could they get some benefit? Sure. Is that all they're going to need? Probably not. But we're not going to claim to fix anything. That applies for so many things. It's we're focusing on where people could go and what they would want.
That's amazing. That, you know, I love that. You know, where you can go and where you want. I'm all the time, when people are asking me how do I discover the meaning in life. You know, that's fulfillment in life. And I always say two things: what do you like to do, and what excites you.
Yeah.
And that's what you need to focus on. You know, what kinds of things do you like to do, and what kinds of things excite you? You focus on that, and all of the other bullshit goes away.
Right.
You know, you're just, you're right there.
Well, that's the Joseph Campbell thing of following your bliss. I liken it to, and this is sort of stealing some of his ideas, but I liken it to almost like a record player, where if we're lost and we don't know, we're aimless, we're not doing the things that we really like. It's like we're literally scratching the surface of that needle, and it sounds awful. It's like a record scratching. But once we find that thing or start doing those things that are meaningful to us, then our needle finds the groove in life. And it's as though things clear out of our way that were obstacles at first, and things fall in our path that we needed. And life just gets a little smoother, and our music plays.
That moves on to the next question. And Paul, by the way, be ready for us to go a little longer today. I have too many.
Yes, Charlie. Yes,
whoa,
Charlie.
The voice from above.
Yes, Charlie.
Yes, Master.
And you'll become even more relaxed as you're doing that.
Yeah. Well, we've covered a lot of them, but you just ended in some. And I want to know, what are the positive aspects of hypno coaching, and what is it used for, and who can benefit? You know, we've already identified people with bad habits, with eating disorders, and perhaps even lack of happiness, not depression.
Right. But. Although, you know, and I have seen individuals who were diagnosed with depression with a referral from a licensed therapist, where we can, if they have a diagnosable mental health issue, referrals from licensed therapists. If they have a physical issue, a referral from a doctor, then we can all work together. And
you can work on physical issues?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. We would say that the unconscious mind is your body. Your body is your unconscious mind. And it happens all the time. We're seeing this. In fact, sometimes I call it the Minnesota hunch, where in the winter in Minnesota, where I'm from, it's so cold. Like, it seems like your shoulders are permanently up to your ears, and you can imagine possibly you're getting some muscle tightness. Well, this is happening to all of us in one way or another, where we're internalizing things we're holding on to, we're internalizing stresses in our bodies somewhere. So that's one way, but also just motivation to do things. Like tomorrow I'm giving a talk on diabetes and hypnotherapy, where first the doctor is going to be talking about diabetes from the Western medicine perspective, and then I am as far as the risk factors, the modifiable risk factors, things like what? Like diet, weight loss, releasing stress, getting some exercise. But I add things like chronic pain, where if you have type 2 diabetes, and generally, although it's changing now, there's sometimes younger, but usually people are older. They might have chronic pain. If you have chronic pain, are you wanting to go out and exercise? Well, if you don't exercise, maybe you're sitting home and you're maybe snacking. So you're putting on more weight. Your chronic pain gets worse. And then maybe some depression sits in. So all these other factors go into it. What I do is I help people strip away some of these factors, work on some of these risk factors, so that some light shines through and they make some progress.
It is so complex. How are you able to reduce it to actionable items?
Well, in the case of something like diabetes, I talk to the doctor, like, well, what would you want? What's the diet you want this person to be on? We work on motivating them to be on the diet. And because I'm seeing them for, traditionally, it's like an hour a week. We have a lot of time to go over the goals, how was it last week? What are the wins? And what type of suggestions do we need this week? And so it's this motivating them to do something a certain way. I've used hypnosis for almost everything I can think of. So a bunch of different medical things, physical things. I've mentioned pain. The relaxation response is positive for anything. Any kind of tons of anxiety issues. Yeah, addiction stuff, the fears and phobias. As I mentioned, the thing I love to do is people who have public speaking issues. Sexual health is a big thing, is relaxing into a sexual connection with your partner. It changes everything. Pretty much everything. What I like to think of is when I'm working with somebody on whatever their presenting issue is, it's always other things connected to it. But I like to think I'm talking to their conscious mind the first, like, 40 minutes of the session, because we're talking about how things are going and what they want to work on. And then I'm talking to their unconscious mind, and I believe I'm actually also talking to what you might label their core self, their higher self, that other part of them. The part of them that gets it, the part of them that knows that they could fix all these different things,
right.
But they have
right.
the answer.
Right.
So I give these suggestions for making these changes and like following the diet plan and the exercise plan and getting sleep and working on these specific things. And I give them suggestions for what if your insulin were to just balance itself? Why not? We don't know. We don't know what's causing it.
Right.
Give suggestions more directly for it because you're still seeing a doctor, and I'm talking to their unconscious to their core self, their higher self, saying, "What do you know that you need to do? What's the suggestion that you know that you need to have?" Because I'm giving what I can think of, but I'm talking to that part of them that gets it.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Let's
yep.
say I'm a I'm far from normal, so let's say
aren't we all?
Let's say I was a normal, whatever that is. It seems to me that if 90% of our intelligence and motivating thought is coming from the unconscious, and you know our worldview, the way we think of. Wouldn't this be a modality that would help everyone, no matter, you know, even if you don't have some serious diagnosis that you're trying to work through? Isn't it something that could benefit just about everybody walking the planet?
This is I'm the most biased person to ask that from, but literally nobody's more biased than I am on this answer, but yes, we're doing it anyway to some degree. I like to think of the iceberg thing, as I mentioned before, where the top, that's the part that's above the water, is the conscious mind. The part that's below is the unconscious mind. But if we want to make any real change, we gotta jump to a whole new iceberg. Because that's where the real change is. Everyone can benefit in that. That's why it's like, well, what is it good for? I've had people come in where, I'm getting a lot of people for business success right now. Like, how does that apply? Well, we're working on their goals. We're working on the obstacles they create
right.
between
right.
themselves and the goal.
Right.
Like, and we talk about these things, and we bring up the obstacles that they've created. And we release them, because when we're in the higher, like let's say beta brain frequencies, especially from the really high beta, we get in that loop of thinking that we just keep thinking. Again, 96% of all of our thoughts are the same as they were yesterday.
I did not know
so
that.
It just circles around. We don't solve anything when we're in those higher beta frequencies. That's when the external world seems like the reality, when our agreed upon fiction seems like the reality. When we can slow our mind. And we do by getting into hypnosis. And I tend to hypnotize by getting into a light trance myself, meaning be the state I want them to be in. So I'll also slow down my speaking. And we slow down the brain waves, slow down the thinking into the alpha, maybe possibly into theta waves, so that the internal reality becomes greater. And if you've meditated, you know that once we get into that meditative state, things expand a bit, and our choices expand.
Exactly.
We aren't as limited.
Yes.
Now they're more open to things. We've bypassed the critical area. We've bypassed all the, I'm not this, I can't this, the world's this way, life is hard, whatever they've been told by parents, by doctors, by culture, and they've reinforced in their self-talk. We bypass that for pretty much everything, including business success. Like, what do you want to be telling yourself? What are the suggestions you'd like to have? And maybe it's reading books by, you know, Elon Musk or whatever, and you take those suggestions, or you pick and choose, and you download, kind of like the Matrix, you download the belief systems and the internal dialogue that you want to have. So you just automatically
Absolutely.
Start doing these things.
Yeah. It's you know, I strongly believe in habits and rituals, and doing certain rituals in the day
right.
that are healthy for me, that get me in the right mindset to proceed
right.
without all of the crap that's going on in my brain. Now, since we're running near out of time, and I can see Paul fidgeting over there.
That's just the hypnosis.
That's what we needed to do, was hypnotize him to say this is going to be an hour and a half session.
It only seems like 15 minutes.
Get ready. You know, we're Joe Rogan minor. You know, Joe Rogan with the 3-hour podcast.
Right.
There's a big question out there, and it's certainly a big question with me, and we have different names for it, but I know a lot of people know it as regressive therapy, where a person suddenly through therapy or through hypnosis discovers at 5 years old they were raped by a relative or some kind of thing. And which turns out many times to be absolutely untrue. And it just, you know, the damage throughout the family is incomprehensible. What is, and do you do, what you call age regression?
I generally do not. Now, what I would say is that what hypnosis does best is suggest. What it does worst is uncover. So I don't go fishing for anything, because as objective as I try to be, if I were to say something like, okay, so go back to the time and where are you? I'm sitting on the couch. Who's next to you? You know, Uncle Frank. Oh, then what happens next? Now, because of culture, they might think, I wonder if he did something.
Right.
Now, what I tell every single client is sometimes when we go into a hypnosis session, things might occur to you that seem like memories. And they may or may not have any truth to them. We don't know. So I don't go fishing for anything. In fact, it goes back to the other thing I talk about where the best thing to do is go forward. Instead of uncovering something in the past, who cares? Create something compelling into the future. I once had a referral to me where it was a 85-year-old woman. She was referred to me, and we did a phone call before she was going to come in. And she said, you know what, doesn't seem like I can remember, or I can't remember anything before the age of 12. Okay. And I go, well, that's interesting. And I go, how is your life now? She goes, it's never been better. She's 85 years old. Her life has never been better. And I said, yeah, you don't need to come in. You know, not necessary.
I don't need your money.
Yeah, no, nope. It's like, I'm not going to go looking for anything that might have gone wrong, because clearly that's what she thought. Maybe something happened. It's like maybe your unconscious mind is blocking something because it knows that by doing so, you're able to have the best life you've ever had at 85.
Yeah, that blocking of the unconscious mind can be a very healthy thing. It's the old hand on the stove.
Right.
You know, why keep going back to that when you learned about that?
Yeah, so there is no need. And I said, you know, the most I would ever do is, I mean, I can put in some nice memories. We can make some up and put them in there. But you're already saying your life is great. We can work on something else. But again, you say everything is great. There sounds like there's nothing to work on. So there's no reason to go back and do these age regression therapies. I just, like, at the most I might for a fear or phobia, if they know when the fear happened, maybe we'll go back. But even then, they pretty much know the situation. We're not fishing for anything. It's just not necessary. And boy, it can cause things and start things that you just never wanted. Not necessary.
Yeah, I have a coach now that I actually discovered in a writing class together, and she's been on the podcast, Dina Crowder. She's been on the podcast 3 times, and she's into archetypes, and that we, not that we have one archetype, that we each have 9 archetypes. That I found, I did a coaching process with her for a year, and it was one of the most powerful things I've ever experienced. And it was all about where you are now, what is stopping you now from moving to the next phase? Let's don't go into your past and see, you know, you had a crappy childhood and that got in the way. What is stopping you right now? And let's move on from that or positive things to move on, and it's been extraordinarily helpful. I really like your idea of not necessarily. There are times I have to contradict myself here. There are times it is important to understand if we had negative things happen in the past and we have no idea of them and they are being detrimental, they're coming up and coming up and right. coming up. We need to find those and try to move past those. But I like your idea that thinking confidently, thinking proactively, thinking, what can I do now? How can I move forward? That's going to take me a hell of a lot farther than it is if I'm worrying about, you know, whatever I did when I was 30 or 25 years old, which right. we don't want to talk about on radio.
Well, and for me personally, I mean, I'm a hypno coach, right? So if we go back and a person believes that they were sexually abused, one, they may or may not have been. Two, it's out of my scope. I don't do that. I don't do that kind of therapy. So now we've done a couple of things that I don't want to get into. So, but I can create positive future realities. Let's focus on that. It is right. my scope, and right. it's better anyway. So let's just right. do that. If you really want to do those things, one, fine, but I'm legally not the person who can even do it. And I don't want to anyway, so...
Well, Jonathan, listen. I'm gonna put your contact information on our show notes. But I really encourage. You know, I'm an over-assessed person. You know, and I'm threatened to go. And I have a great life right now. So, you know, but it just sounds too fascinating to get into my unconscious. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, yeah, the website is the best way. So they can go to my website and contact me through email.
And your website is the
Mythic Heart. Yeah, Mythic Heart, one word, mythicheart.com. And I have some free hypnosis downloads on there. I have a free webinar called Thriving Beyond Your Health Issues, 5 Keys to Releasing Dis-Ease, like Louise Hay might say.
Yes.
It's a free
yes.
webinar. It's like an hour long and talks a lot about health issues and how to get over those things. And there's also a free track people get if they listen to it, and they get a free strategy call with me. But if anyone listens to this and they just say free strategy call, I'll give them a free strategy call, and we'll talk about if what I do is right for what they want and if we're a good match.
Do you make any money? You give so much crap away that you did, you know.
No, you gotta give stuff away first. You gotta.
Yeah, I agree.
Show your value, right?
I'm just teasing you. Where are you located?
I'm located everywhere. I live in Newport Beach, but I see clients online. So literally, I have clients anywhere on the planet as long as they have a Wi-Fi connection.
You do hypnotherapy online?
Online, yeah.
We haven't talked about this?
No, I don't think so. Years ago, I figured out how to do phone sessions when they didn't have video, like in 2004 or whatever. But then now that I use Zoom, now that there's video and audio, I have hypnotized clients I've never met in person. So they can be anywhere. And because I'm not licensed, I'm not bound by California, I can see anyone anywhere for, well, anything if they get a referral from somebody. But yeah, I'm everywhere.
Yeah, I yep. really encourage our audience to consider contacting Jonathan. At least go to your website and find out what's going on, because I think your approach is very encouraging. It's a very encouraging and it's a very insightful approach. I'm very Jungian, and so I'm very strong into the unconscious and
yeah.
and how that really does boy, and I have questions about the unconscious, but don't worry, Paul, I'm not going to ask.
Oh yeah, and I do dream therapy and we do writing journals and dream journals. There's a lot of stuff we get into with unconscious
stuff. Yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, mysticheart.com.
Mythic Heart. Mythology.
Mythicheart.com.
Yeah.
Not Mystic Heart. You're going to get some sort of wowie wooey. Who knows what you're going
to
get on
My dad likes to say it's like my thick heart, but you just spelled thick incorrectly. I'm like, well, that's complicated, Dad.
Yeah, that is. But
it's kind of.
Probably yeah. would help me. But I really encourage everybody to get a hold of you. Jonathan Fisher, it was very cool doing this show with you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Very fun.
Very fun. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, which is thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.